Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Well, the USA does not seem to mind if the whole world knows where its priority and loyalties lie. This as the new Secretary of State Mike Pompeo inaugurates his first overseas trip to nowhere other than the Middle East. Riyadh and Tel Aviv are the main stopping points on this trip, as these three entities seem to be more worried about Iran's growing influence in the region rather than terrorism. Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on this debate.
The Iran nuclear deal still hangs in the balance, with U.S. officials sending mixed signals as to what President Donald Trump will do when he is to announce on May the 12th if he extends sanctions relief for Tehran. U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton says Trump has not decided whether to scrap the Iran nuclear deal.
He is certainly considering the framework, the four pillars that President Macron laid out in their meetings last week.
While it keeps other countries guessing as to what Trump will do, his administration is keeping up its anti-Iran rhetoric. In his first remarks as the U.S. Secretary of State on a foreign visit, Mike Pompeo strongly criticized Iran in Saudi Arabia, calling it the greatest state sponsor of terrorism.
Iran destabilizes this entire region. It supports proxy militias and terrorist groups.
From Saudi Arabia, Pompeo fly to Israel, another arch enemy of Iran alongside the Saudi regime. There he leveled similar accusations against Tehran. With the U.S. apparently pushing for scrapping the Iran nuclear deal, the European members of the P5 plus one group, namely Germany, Britain and France, have reaffirmed their support for the accord. But they stand accused of playing a double game, as they have called for renegotiating the agreement, while on the surface stating that it's the best way to, quote, restrict Iran's nuclear activities. French President Emmanuel Macron on Sunday reassured his Iranian counterpart Hassan Rouhani on the phone that Paris will remain in the deal. Rouhani reiterated to Macron that Iran will not accept anything beyond its commitments under the accord. Iran believes Europe's calls for renegotiating the nuclear accord are part of its policy of appeasement vis-a-vis Trump, and that this will eventually cause the agreement to unravel.
We made this terrible deal.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program, both out of London, Mr. Tony Gosling, investigative journalist, and Richard Millett, journalist and political commentator. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off with Richard Millett. It appears that U.S.-Saudi ties have never been closer. How does this affect Washington's policies when it comes to situations in the Middle East and especially Iran?
Well, Marzia, I think that the main preoccupation is keeping the Middle East as terrorist-free as possible, to get some sort of stability there, which it hasn't had obviously for a long time, and to secure Israel. And at the moment, unfortunately, Iran's obvious call for the eradication of Israel, its interferences in Lebanon, in Syria, and Iraq, and in Yemen, all in effect financed by this nuclear agreement, which gave sanctions relief to Tehran of some $100 billion, let's not forget. And the Iranian people have not seen the benefits of this. I think Barack Obama and the rest of the P5 plus one were hoping for some improvement for the Iranian people and for the Iranian economy. That was the main point of sanctions relief. Unfortunately, it seems that virtually all of this $100 million has gone into.
Okay, let me get Tony Gosling in. Tony, your take on Alice. It's actually quite mind-boggling, because when we look at the situation, Richard Millett just talked about terrorism in the region, and we know that Iran actually has been the biggest fighter of terrorism in the region. Even U.S. President Donald Trump, prior to him becoming president, he even praised not only the Syrian government, but also Iran and Hezbollah for actually fighting the terrorists in the region. So that's coming from the U.S. president himself. Your take on what has been said?
TV network, and this is one of the problems, is that what we're getting is very partial information, pretty much from all sides, unless they're removed from the fight. So you'll get, say, for example, the BBC criticizing Iran and not much else. You don't actually get a fair commentary on any of the networks. But what we've just heard from Richard Millett is effectively exactly what the United States and Israel have been doing, which is disrupting and interfering in the region. There wouldn't be this conflict in Syria if it hadn't been for the intervention and the interference of the United States. A lot of the problems have come from the British and the US creation, if the first people to recognize the Zionist state and the state of Israel. And I think it's a bit rich to hear from Richard that Israel is under threat, when it's done things like occupy and take over the Golan Heights, which just happens to be rich in oil. And Rupert Murdoch's Fox Network, and he also is a stakeholder in Genie Energy in the Golan Heights. So he's got the TV networks, for example, over in the West have got a vested interest in seeing the Golan Heights retained as Israeli property, where actually they're part of Syria under international law. So all the destabilization of Syria has really helped Israel quite a lot in destabilizing the neighboring country. So it starts to look as if the Golan Heights are just going to become Israel's because everything has been so disrupted in Syria. But, there's Mike Pompeo is an interesting character, isn't he? He's a new face on the scene. We seem to be changing senior staff in the US government almost every week, and he talks about things like the Iranian threat. He's over in Saudi Arabia talking about them interfering in the Iranians interfering in Syria. Actually,
right, okay.
It's the Saudis who've been financing many of these jihadi gangs in Syria. So, what's happening often is we're getting the US particularly accusing other people of things which they've been up to and their allies have
been up to. Stay with me, Tony. Now, Richard, both regimes are extremely anti-Iran and are urging Washington to subject Iran to more pressure, talking about Israel and Saudi Arabia, including more sanctions. Doesn't this show just how much these two regimes actually have in common? And what does that say about both these regimes?
You speak of a regime. I mean, Israel's government is democratically elected, unlike Saudi Arabia, unlike Iran. Saudi Arabia, unfortunately, a theocratic dictatorship that oppress their own people, at least Israelis.
Richard Millett, first of all, there are elections in Iran, and we're not talking about Iran's elections right now, though Iran definitely has had many since 1979. But we're talking about the Israeli regime meaning that it excludes the rights of its so many people, and we see what is being done with the Palestinians. But that is not the topic at hand right now. Can you answer the question?
Well, I mean, there's no free and fair elections in Iran at all. And many Arabs, as you know, 20% of Israel has an Arab population. And the Palestinians are even far better off than living under some of the theocratic regimes that we're seeing in other Arab countries. Tony, I gave you your chances to come out with your extreme conspiracy theory. Can at least get some
theory.
Sense, speak some sense, please?
Israeli soldiers.
Tony, we know, Tony, respect freedom of speech. We know that you don't like freedom of speech.
Go ahead, Richard.
Let me speak.
Go ahead, Richard.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Israel would like there to be peace with Iran. Israel has nothing against the Iranian country, against the Iranian people. There was peace between Iran and Israel before 1979, when there was this takeover, unfortunately, of the Iranian people by Ayatollah Khomeini.
Ever since then, the relations obviously between Israel and Iran has gone downhill to the extent that Iran wishes to eradicate and annihilate the Jewish state. Now, anyone that wishes to do that to another country is beyond the pale.
Okay.
That is an
All right. Let me get Tony Gosling back in. Let me get Tony back in on this. It's interesting because if we look at what the Israelis are doing, and especially as you were just pointing out, to the last few weeks in Gaza, and how many Palestinians have been killed just with peaceful protesting, it is absolutely mind-boggling.
Hamas.
It is mind-boggling to think that the Israeli regime is anything but a regime. But Tony, when Saudi Arabia is involved in a deadly bombing campaign of Yemen that has taken over 14,000 lives, and Israel, as I've just talked about, killing tens of peaceful Palestinian protesters during the last week, and Washington basically
Hamas.
Pleads allegiance to these regimes. I mean, what is that saying about the United States and its priorities?
Well, the priority is actually we've now got Netanyahu virtually is Mike Pompeo. They're very, very close, and they agree on everything. And this shows how powerful the Israel lobby has been in the United States in actually getting rid of Rex Tillerson, who wasn't 100% behind Netanyahu. Pompeo seems to be 110% behind him. We also had the intervention in London, which was exposed by Al Jazeera, which is maybe one of the reasons why the Saudis want Al Jazeera's closed down, which was the Israeli political attaché, Shai Massot, saying he's got a £1 million slush fund in order to influence the British opposition political parties in Israel's favour, and then are threatening to take out a Tory defence minister. I don't think he meant to kill him. He meant to actually get him removed from power. So the Israeli lobby is very active. It's very effective, and particularly in Britain and the United States. And it's a bit rich to hear Iran accused of being a theocracy, when what we've effectively got in Israel is a Christian Zionist and Jewish Zionist theocracy, which is also racist, and they just want the Palestinians gone. They're not even as like the South Africans were in apartheid state. We've had Gilad Atzmon, the jazz musician, Jewish jazz musician, saying, look, they actually just want them out. They don't even want to enslave the Palestinians. They just want them gone. They want them to disappear. And it seems that there is this faction, and I'm not saying Richard's part of this, but in Israel, that actually thinks that there will be, that a war is inevitable. And so when there's overtures of peace, the Israelis seem to rebut them. They don't seem to be really interested in peace. Ever since we had the horrific assassination of the Israeli Prime Minister back in 1995, with the biggest peace rally there's ever been in Jerusalem, and then the Prime Minister was assassinated, and Netanyahu swept to power. Effectively, he's a racist Prime Minister, and I don't he's fit to do the job, and he's
All
been
right.
there
Let
ever
me get
since.
Richard back in on this. Tony, stay with me. Richard, Iran seems to be the main topic of conversation for Pompeo in both Riyadh and Tel Aviv. Why is it that Iran is the thorn in the side of both these entities?
Tony makes me laugh to say that Israel wants to get rid of the Palestinians. Palestinian population is growing consistently, as is the Arab and Muslim population inside Israel. So if Israel wants to get rid of them, it's not doing a very good job, seeing as the populations are continuously growing. So this conspiracy theorist, Tony, has to really look at his arguments and revisit them. As I've said before, when Iran is dedicated itself, instead of looking after its own people, is pumping this $100 million of sanctions relief into Hezbollah and Hamas, into terrorist Hezbollah in Lebanon, terrorist Hezbollah in Syria, the terrorist Houthis in Yemen,
any entity, any group that actually fights for its own independence, for its own rights, is labeled a terrorist by you. Is that your definition of terrorism? But not Daesh, not al-Nusra Front.
No, of course, Daesh are also terrorists on a par with Hezbollah. And
interesting, because Hezbollah is actually
Hamas.
Fighting Daesh. That's a very interesting dichotomy.
No doubt about that. And Iran has obviously fought Daesh, and that's probably the only one positive that Iran, the Iranian regime has actually done fighting.
What does that mean, though, Richard? So if the Iranian government, if the Iranians and Hezbollah are fighting against Daesh, Daesh, who you just admitted now, are actually terrorists and also al-Nusra Front. However, Israel, as we know, actually treated some of those same terrorists from al-Nusra Front. So what does that mean here, then, Richard? Who is the terrorist and who is supporting the terrorists and who is fighting the terrorists?
Well, Israel was treating Syrian civilians. But the only reason Iran has been fighting Daesh is because Iran wants to establish, like it's taken over Lebanon, Lebanon is now functioning under Iran's control. We'll find Syria also functioning under Iran's control, like Iraq is functioning under Iran's control, and Yemen is functioning under Iran's control. So Iran is the main terrorist destabilizing, unfortunately, the Middle East.
And Saudi Arabia and Israel's role in destabilization in this region, your perspective on that, Richard?
Yes, Saudi Arabia also, I mean, also terrorist sympathies, unfortunately. But at least the new crown prince is actually trying to concentrate on his people and put his people in focus, try to alleviate the problems of his people.
That's all right, let me get you back in this, Tony.
Iran isn't doing that at all.
Tony, your take. Stay with me, Richard. Tony, your take on all this. When we look at it, in your perspective, what really is it about Iran that both Saudi Arabia and Israel want to cause as many problems as possible? And we see that the focus for those two entities are actually not dealing with terrorism, but actually dealing with Iran.
Well, what we're hearing at the moment and what we're seeing is what the military call the hardening of the sides. That is to say, pre-conflict, what you find is anybody that's an independent actor is forced through circumstances to take one side or another, and that's what's happening in the Middle East. Now, this is should be a warning sign to everybody, including Richard, that conflict could be coming. Now, when Trump calls the JCPOA, you know, the nuclear deal, a terrible deal, he couldn't be more wrong, because this deal, as the Europeans have had to bang his head, well, gently anyway, against the wall to show him, is actually the best bet there's been for Middle East peace since the Oslo Accords, which Netanyahu has made such a mess of back in 1995. The Oslo Accords were looking at actually giving autonomy to the Palestinian settlements, and it was effectively a two-state solution, and it was going to actually mean that there was no more interference by the Israeli government in Palestinian affairs, and they were going to be left to run their own thing. So that was absolutely wrong to say it's a terrible deal. It's a fantastic deal. And Macron has also pointed out to Trump that the Paris climate talks were a fantastic deal as well. So Trump needs, I think, a good listen to what some of his European friends are telling him. And let's remember that Europe is much closer to the Middle East than the United States. It's very easy to sit in Washington and pontificate on what shouldn't happen, whatever it is, about 5,000 miles away. And also, we heard today, haven't we, at Deir ez-Zor, more conflict by the West and NATO's proxy armies. I mean, we're hearing all the time from Richard about Iran's proxy armies, but look at today. Just today in Deir ez-Zor, we are having the forces of Syria, maybe mainly the Syrian Arab Army, having to face down these proxy armies of the West. I think what's happening in Syria is slowly but surely, with Russian help, the Iranian and mainly the Syrians are whittling away at these terrorists.
Okay.
And I think ultimately they have to go. I mean, and maybe there'll be some sort of decision about what happens.
All right, stay with me. Stay with me. Let me get Richard back in on this.
My final point is it all suits Israel.
Tony, stay with me. Richard, Donald Trump's cabinet is more hawkish now than ever before. With such a cabinet, what do you think is likely now going to happen with this situation? And there's so, excuse me, so much animosity against Iran.
Oh, you need to have a glass of water. Hope you're okay. I love Tony. It's the Zionists. It's all Israel, the Zionists, the Jewish state, blah, blah, blah. This guy's a typical Corbynist or extremist, unfortunately. But we'll have to wait and see what happens on May the 12th. And let's hope that, I mean, the problems are that at the end of this current period, 10-year period, Iran will then seek to get the nuclear bomb. And that there were no proper inspections of these Iranian nuclear sites. So there has to be concentration on what happens after this deal expires and inspecting the sites.
All right. Richard Miller, stay with me. Tony Gosling, 1 minute, final comments.
Okay. Are there any inspections, Richard, of the Israeli nuclear sites? There's something like 200 or 300 nuclear weapons the Israelis have. Because at the United Nations, many countries are extremely concerned that the Israelis seem to be able to kill 40 Palestinians, injure 5,500 with their army, 450 children injured with impunity. Now, this doesn't say a lot for the trustworthiness of the Israeli Defense Forces if all they can do is shoot unarmed women, men, and children.
And on that note, I'm so sorry, but we have to end this conversation. We're out of time, and my apologies for losing my voice briefly. I appreciate both my guests out of London, Tony Gosling and Richard Millett, both journalists. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi. See you next time.